This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2023, held at Faith Builders on August 1 to 4.
Principals are architects of the future. Oh, by the way, if you didn't get a handout, there are handouts back there on the at the back of the room on that cart. If the principal doesn't have ideas for child training, can't handle conflict, doesn't know what the church should look like in 50 years, doesn't know what the current issues are, have any ideas to handle them, doesn't know Jesus, who is supposed to know and do these things? Church leaders, right? It's always their problem, isn't it? Maybe some of you are church leaders, too. How many of you are church leaders? And okay, so that maybe that's coming yet. It tends to be this trend where start out as a principal, but so consider the hours of influence a teacher or principal has over the young compared to one minister speaking maybe 1 hour a week. It's hours of difference. So principals are influential and architects of the future. There's one minister in our church who has repeatedly told me and said over the pulpit that I have the most influential position in the church when it comes to impacting the youth, and therefore the future of the church. That's humbling and scary, and if you weren't ready to quit because of all those other low-pay, high-stress reasons, maybe now you are. But I think that's been encouraging to me over the years. It's hard to stick at a job that other people don't value, but hearing from my community or from the church leadership that you are valuable has impacted me in ways that I probably don't know. But maybe some principals should quit. There was once a mean private school principal who was concerned about enrollment and told his secretary, "Get 30 new students by the end of the week or you're fired." At the end of the week, she had 30 new students enrolled. The principal asked, "How did you do it?" "Oh," she said, "I just started a rumor that you were leaving." So he led by example. His meanness was reciprocated. His character stood out. And that reminds me of James 3:1, commonly translated as teachers. "My brethren, be not many masters or teachers, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation." So principles are influential for good or evil. There's no way around it. So we had one mean example. How about a good example? The Nadia Lopez story. Nadia Lopez was ready to quit. She couldn't fall asleep without a pill or function without coffee. Stress triggered an autoimmune abdominal disease that felt like her insides were burning. 4 years earlier, Lopez had founded Mont Hall Bridges Academy, a middle school in Brownsville for kids in a dirt-poor, violence-plagued neighborhood. But the love and attention she showered on the city's most challenging students didn't matter, she felt, because the numbers, their scores, on the tough Common Core exams still came in well below average. "I was tired. I was angry. I had my laptop ready to write my letter of resignation," Lopez said. Then a miracle happened. On January 9th, 2015, eighth grader Videl Chastanet popped up on the Humans of New York blog. Asked who influenced him most in life, the youth replied, "My principal, Mrs. Lopez. When we get in trouble, she doesn't suspend us," he said. "She calls us to her office and explains to us how society was built down around us. She tells us that each time somebody fails out of school, a new jail cell gets built. And one time she made every student stand up one at a time and she told each of us that we matter." The Facebook post went viral. A crowdfunding campaign to send Mont Hall students on visits to Harvard University, which Lopez believed would inspire them, raised $1.4 million. The White House invited Lopez and Videl to meet President Obama. So I know your situation is probably different, but the principal of the principal, and this is the principal of the principal part, is the pow part. If we, doesn't that just annoy you when, you know, it's spelled one way or the other? I know some of us can't remember it either, but it's all about the people. So the principle of the principle is it's all about people. Effective business leaders know this. I consider this quote, "When it comes to business success, it is all about people, people, people," by Richard Branson. In fact, Toyota's business philosophy is built around respect for people and continuous improvement, two guiding principles any principal would do well to consider. Again, that's respect for people and continuous improvement. It seems to me, in some stories I've read, that Honda and Toyota have focused on the customer and gotten their employees on board, and their cars have outsold in some ways some American car companies who focused on product and have fallen behind in some ways. One little anecdote I remember from reading something is that Honda people came over and checked out, what do Americans want in their vehicles? You know, one of the top things Americans need in a vehicle? Cup holders. And so, after I read this, I looked at my Honda Odyssey. There's one on each door. There's two in the center. There's a center thing you can pull out for two more. And when I'm in the driver's seat, I have a total of seven cup holders that I could access from the driver's seat. And everybody in the back has an opportunity too. So what does the customer want? What do the people want? Where there is no vision, the people perish. So when you consider a web of all the relationships you as a principal must maintain with the people, it might look something like this, the principal's web. And you are the flesh to this vision, or you'd better be, you should learn how to be. So what would happen if you lost all the people off your web? There would be no school. The school's not the building, not the books, not the ideas, it's the people. It's not about programs, it's about people. 1 Peter 2:5, you yourselves, like living stones, are being built up into a spiritual house. It's the people that make up the kingdom. But people are hard work, they're living stones, and they don't always stay where you set them in the wall. You need a little more mortar sometimes, you feel like, but God knows this. In fact, one of my first employers told me, supervision is half the work. Some definitions of supervision. Look over, oversee, look ahead. Here's an illustration I found from March 1928 of the supervisor up here looking out over different parts of the academic curriculum. So this is just to give maybe a comic picture of all the things you have to manage as a principal. There are all these parts you have to look over and oversee and look ahead. What are we going to do for achievement testing this year? You know what? Graduation is coming up, and it's your job to be looking ahead. And other people in the school, they're just concerned about tomorrow. Is it going to be a snow day tomorrow or not? But you're looking ahead to the end of the year, and if we have too many snow days, how's that going to impact the end of the year? So your job as a supervisor or a principal is to be looking ahead. Supervisors, and this is just another way to illustrate, supervisors have a lot of demands on them. When my grandpa was asked how he could stack hay bales so fast and efficiently, he said, "When I'm stacking a bale, I'm already planning where to stack the next one." And this, from what I understand, was before the kicker wagon. Before the kicker would just put it in the wagon, it would come off the baler, and they took it and stacked it on the bale wagon. And so he was turning around and getting this one, and he already knew where he was going to put this bale before he was picking it up. And then while he was stacking this one, he was planning for the next one. So that just describes your job as a principal. Not every worker does look ahead, but the bottom line is every organization or group of people, since, again, the web, you're leading a group of people, needs a person in charge. On a fire scene, there has to be someone taking charge or it's chaos. There has to be clear rules and expectations. It doesn't matter so much which firefighters are assigned to raise the ladder or drag the hose, since they're trained to do all of it. it matters that someone has given directions to make sure it gets done in the shortest amount possible, the closest resources. And by the way, I'm a volunteer firefighter in our local department, so I might use firefighting analogy. So it doesn't matter exactly who does it, but we need somebody to do it now. And if you're fighting over each other, it's not going to get done efficiently. So we need a supervisor to discover who has the best talents for the need at hand. Another story, when I was a teenager in high school, I caught chickens in the evenings, broilers off the floor for live market in New York City. And I prided myself on catching as fast as I could, either by sixes or eights, and carrying them out, putting crates on the truck. And one time my boss put me in charge in the house when he was gone, and he said, "It's okay if you don't get any chickens caught tonight. It's your job to see that they don't pile up and die. Supervision is half the work." So that was the context in which he said that quote. And I found myself as a teenager in this position of, you know, priding, all I had done before that was priding myself on how many chickens I could get out the door as fast as possible. And now, sometimes I need to just stop catching chickens and go around the edges and make sure they're not piling on top of each other and smothering the ones underneath, because if half the chickens die, nobody's making money. So that was, an early glimpse for me of what is involved in supervision. So if we can afford to put one man in charge of a small crew of chicken catchers, can we afford to not put someone in charge of our student catching? So this means, in addition to the daily grind of phone calls, questions, visits, and fires we're called to put out in our daily oversight, we must find time to sit down and look ahead. People don't understand that good principals aren't just planning this summer for the coming year. They're thinking 10 years out, a generation out, or planning for eternity, because principals are architects of the future. So with that introduction, let's move on to effective principals. Effective principals view themselves as responsible for all aspects of their school. Knowing that supervision is important, most educators, according to one study, would enroll their children in a school that just hired a great principal but has a weak staff, rather than a school with a strong staff who just hired a weak principal. So, when I say they view themselves as responsible, this does not mean that they don't involve others in decision making or delegate. Rather, delegation is good. Rather, they believe it's their responsibility to make the school the best it can be. So the buck stops here. Who is supposed to be concerned about this? I am. I might not be able to answer all the questions myself, but I'm dedicated to seeking out those who can give input or help me find the answers. Whereas less effective principals blame outside factors. It's always the parents, the teachers, the students. We got the wrong batch of students in. Or it's the government's fault. They don't let us do this or that. So I ask you, who's responsible for the climate in your school? Effective principals respond, "I am." Less effective principals respond, "Everybody is," or "The teachers are. I can't do anything with these teachers," etc. Ineffective principals complain, but effective principals listen and seek advice to find solutions. So, in review, three main principles for principals are, but slightly stated in a different way, it's all about people, supervision is half the work, and take responsibility. Any questions or comments so far? Again, I want to stress, with you taking responsibility, it doesn't mean that you can do everything yourself, but you need to feel that responsibility, that if I can't do this, rather than letting the ball drop, I'll find someone who can and connect needs and resources. Questions or comments so far?
Is the role of the principal, would you say, is it pretty uniform as far as all schools, or does it, or should, and does, I know it does vary quite a bit, but should it vary as far as what's demanded of the principal, depending on the school and school board?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say it does vary a lot on how much authority and responsibility different schools invest in their principal. Some have a team. Some see a distinguishing difference between administrator, principal. You don't have a lead teacher, but they're still a principal. In my setting, I would say I'm principal and administrator, both. So I'm the main or head teacher. I'm there at school every day, but I'm also the administrator who's the face of the school, responsible for, you know, signing my name to this or involved in many different things. So it can vary. In some sense, I'm trying to stick here to some basics that will apply to everybody. It's your responsibility to be the vision for the school, and yet the structure may differ from school to school. So I probably actually changed some over my years in my complaining about the board, or wishing that the board would do more, the board would care more, the board would visit more, or, you know, take, you know, this feels like a lot of weight on my shoulders. And I'm sure there's still room for growth, but in some ways I've realized, you know, the principal is the one who's in the trenches, has to carry this forward. So it's my job to carry the vision and take it to the board, and, you know, they're busy doing other things. So I'm not sure if that answers your question. Others can speak in here as well. I'd say it does really vary from school to school. Lindbergh, anything come to your mind there?
Well, I was here thinking about how it is for me. So I'm a teaching principal. Mm-hmm. And I tell people that I'm a teacher first and a principal second, because that's just the reality. Mm-hmm. After 50 or 60 hours and invested in teaching, what's left? Mm-hmm. But I wonder, when I look at your supervision as half the work court, then I wonder, yikes, maybe that's not the right way to go about it. And when we've thought about those different ideas, right? I'm not sure what the answer is to all that. I know I super delegate. I'm not sure about supervision, but super delegate.
Yeah, did I answer your question?
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, that's part of, you know, as what Wayne was saying, you know, he needs to work on a job description with his school. That's part of determining with your board, getting clear what is my job description and what isn't. Okay, so if supervision is half the work, I guess the other half is love, or maybe it's teaching. There's a lot in the principal's web here. I'd like to focus today on just three relationships in the teacher's web: parents, faculty, and students. And those are just the ones that I've chosen. So first of all, communicating with parents. We work for parents. True or false?
True. I say true.
True? Anything to add to that? True if? Or maybe we work for the church as well? But yes, we work for the parents. But I read one quote this summer about someone wishing they could administrate orphans because parents are the biggest headache and contribute to teacher turnover. So do you wish your students didn't have parents?
You asked for an if. Would there be situations, could we say we work for the parents as a whole, as a community, as a group?
Mm-hmm.
Not meaning that any single parent is our boss.
Yeah.
That would be the clarification, unfortunately, with experience.
Yeah, I would agree with that, especially with my reference to the church. We work for the parents as members of the church. And I don't know how your school is structured. Again, back to structure, some schools are patron schools, but our church is a church school. So in a sense, I'm working for both, the parents and the church, but or the parents in the context of the church. So in some ways, parents are your biggest headache, or maybe not, but with some experience, You might find out that different parents are different. And yet, this is who we're working for, and this is part of why we're here. We're working for the church. So definitely, we're a team. So we should view ourselves as parents as partners and aim for teamwork with the parents rather than seeing the parents as an adversary and wishing our students didn't have parents. We're helping the parents raise their child. So this comes up in many ways, having discussions with them. How can we work together for the good of Johnny? So I'm going to go through a few practical ways to communicate with parents here, and feel free to chime in with things that you do. Maybe there's already existing structure for some of these things at your school, or maybe it's something that you want to try that you'd like to get some input or discussion on. Newsletters. How many of your schools do a newsletter to communicate with the parents? We got one. A two. One, two. Something else. Okay. So we do a monthly newsletter. We call it the Reflections. And it is to, one of the rules it serves is to push out dates and announcements as well as the calendar section. And then we keep the Bible memory updated in there, you know, a reminder. This is what your child could be reviewing at home. And then we try to put some student work in every month, and I'll try to rotate that around the classroom. Say it's your turn to get Shayna to write something. This is my daughter Shayna back here. To her class to, you know, maybe share some stories they wrote recently, or just some excerpts if there's not room for everything, and then edit that, put it in the newsletter. So then that goes home and the parents are seeing, oh, this is what something this class did recently. And then if I get it done, I try to put a principal blurb in, something I learned from Gerald here, something inspirational related to education, or something I've been thinking, reading about recently. Just try to encourage the parents. And interestingly enough, during COVID, that part increased and the student work went to nothing. So during a few months of COVID, I did some long principal blurbs of, yeah, just trying to keep, because the school is not together physically, just trying to keep the school together and write encouragement, ideas of how to study at home, people who suddenly find themselves in a homeschool environment that they didn't want, trying to give practical tips for how to have a school day at home, encouragement, value of education, etc. I don't remember what all I wrote, but something I remember doing during that time. Any questions or comments you have on newsletters that we could bounce off of each other?
Did you find the monthly frequency to be? Does it drive? So my experience has been, as a teacher, when I was in fifth and sixth grade, I did a mini, just our room. It was next week's Bible memory, any special events coming up. I did that every Friday. Mm-hmm. Just went home. We send a pack of the tests home every Friday. But how does, on a school level, that would be probably a bit intense.
Yeah, I think FBCS here does do a Friday, I think they send out a weekly newsletter. When I came into it, it was monthly, and I felt like that was sustainable with the hats I'm wearing. So weekly would feel like too much for me. It still feels to me like it's coming up weekly, even though it's every month. So we just send the reflections out. So I find monthly to be sustainable. I'm not sure if that answers your question. And I find it to be a good frequency for changes that happen as well in the calendar, or something I can put an announcement in that this has changed on the schedule coming up. Communication slips. This is something we tried at our school, and I can't say it's taken off a lot, but we gave each teacher a communication book and encouraged them, and we have different colors of slips, so pink slip for late work, yellow slip for misconduct, green slip for one of them is score on a test. So it could be good score, it could be bad score, maybe it's outstanding. And I try to encourage them to communicate with parents when things are going as well, and so parents don't just hear from the teachers when they're behind on some work. But it's a goal to try to have something there that the teacher can quickly grab instead of oh, I should write a note to the parent. Well, what? How am I going to do this? Where am I going to find a piece of paper? But if there's a book right there I can grab, and then some of them actually require a parent signature for it to be returned, especially in the case of misconduct. And some of it might just be reporting. Just try to communicate with the parents so I don't have to do phone call and Johnny has to carry this home and give it to his dad and get him to sign it. You know, I said this today or I did this today and in consequence I received this. And so not necessarily telling the parents they have to do anything, but as a parent I would want to know if Shayna punched somebody at school today or something, or maybe she did something kind and you can report that as well. So an idea for you to consider, that just something we tried to make it easier for the teachers to communicate with parents. Some of the younger teachers would prefer texting, and some of the mothers prefer that too. Comments you have on how you communicate with parents or ways you could do it?
I'm afraid that WhatsApp is just about taking over. And I don't even like it, but that's what the parents want. I can hardly get them to respond to emails anymore.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Email almost, I'm about ready to relegate it in the past. Mm-hmm. But WhatsApp, within seconds. Can't believe it. But yeah, so we do a lot of WhatsApp groups.
So you've given in.
Thanks.
From my perspective, I haven't done WhatsApp yet. So yeah. Groups. Can you give us some examples of the groups, like classroom groups?
Yeah, or? Classroom groups. For me, it might even be student groups. Which is getting into another thing that would be more teacher oriented.
I'll second what you said about as a parent, you want to know. I taught for a lot of years without being a parent. Now I am a parent. And there was always this hesitation, well, I just hate to let them know that I think their child is a bad child. That's not the message that the parent is receiving. You know, we're raising these children together, it's a team mm-hmm. effort, prompt communication. If I've seen over the past couple of years any regrets with how the school's handled things, or communication drags on, you go to a parent and say, you know, for several weeks we've been dealing with it. Let them know. Right? Mm-hmm. Encourage your teachers to let them know right away, but also be willing, if it's major issues, to step in at least.
Especially in case of an injury that, okay, it doesn't seem so serious. Somebody fainted and came back or something. I didn't know about it, but teacher observed fainting spell, came back, not, you know, didn't really say anything. Child gets home, parents like, this happened at school and you didn't tell me. So, you know, that kind of thing. Just let them know. Maybe there's an ongoing health issue that indicated that we didn't think about. Mm-hmm. So yeah, prompt communication in case of injury, while that's on my mind, I usually have parents update emergency contact information at the beginning of the year. So for those of you starting out, you know, that's something to consider. Do you have a good method and then alternate method of getting a hold of parents, mom when dad's not available or vice versa? Case of injury.
Any medicine given to ibuprofen, aspirin,
correct.
High school. Because they offer no what they take. But
yeah, we wait in high school, but not in the elementary.
Just, and that's just for knowledge sake.
Any more questions or comments on communicating that way? Phone calls would be similar. Similar topic, but I think there's a time to say, you know, I want to talk to this parent versus just sending a note or a text. There are some things, depending on the weight of the matter, and then if it's weighty enough, maybe you want a face-to-face conversation where they come in for a visit or you go for a visit.
This might be something you'll cover later, but where should the divide be between when the teacher contacts the parents versus they get into the principal?
Yeah, that's a good question. Are you thinking of any example in your mind or not necessarily?
I guess maybe more along student behavior. I'm a teacher and principal, so I'm busy in my classroom mm-hmm. all day as well. So I feel like that's something I still need to clarify with my school board as far as what we're expecting in But so far this past year, any problems that the other classrooms had, I never had to deal. I never contacted any of the parents about any other classroom. It was always always the teacher and the parents, and they were able to work it out there.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, thinking of Matthew 18 in church context, you know, you go to the church leader and he says, "Have you talked to the person directly?" So that's one of the first questions that the teacher comes to me, and I have an ongoing issue with, "Have you talked to the parents about this?" "No, I encourage you to reach out to them." So yes, I would encourage my teachers to talk directly to the parents and even give them permission to do that without talking to me first. You don't need to ask me before you talk to your child's parents. So I would encourage the teachers to communicate with the parents, but then when it becomes an ongoing, "I've been communicating 3 times and nothing has changed," or it's escalating, then definitely report to the principal and I can help you think about next steps to do.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at christianlearning.org or call 814-789-4769. Many Faith Builders recordings are also available on the Dock for Learning at thedockforlearning.org.